Dish from Waitrose is an SE Creative Studio production.
Join us this summer at ABBA Voyage.
Hello, London!
A concert like no other that everyone is talking about. Rolling Stone UK says it has to be seen to be believed. But don't just take our word for it. Experience it for yourself. Only at the ABBA Arena in London. Book now at abbavoyage.com.
This podcast may contain some strong language and adult themes. Oh, hello, and welcome to Dish from Waitrose. I'm Nick Grimshaw.
And I'm Angela Hartnett.
What are you up to? You're doing something.
I'm not.
You're doing a fiddle.
You gave me sparkling water and I was nearly doing a little burp.
Oh, so okay.
In polite society, one turns away from the microphone.
One turns away when
burp. So I don't give it into the sound man's ear.
I come with sad news today.
Oh, Jesus.
Sad for me.
Okay.
One of the saddest things I think you can do is burn your tongue.
Jesus, you really were setting it up for something much bigger than
but
that.
I've bit my tongue.
Bit or burnt?
Bit
your tongue.
But right, and it's really, really interfering with my day ahead of me of eating a really nice Angela Hartnett cooked meal.
Would you like me to puree your food and feed you like Elsa?
I'm quite sad. I was very excited for today and then now I've done it. I've ruined my dish day. Myself. Hey, we got another duo today on Dish, Martin Freeman and Tony Schumacher. You all know Martin Freeman as a wonderful actor. Tony Schumacher is a writer, author. He's written a TV show.
Responder.
The Responder, Series 2, is on the way. You will have seen Series 1 already. If you've not seen it, you can go see it on iPlayer. It's really good.
Very good.
It's very good.
Scary, I think.
Scary, but also, and it's like, it's not too much. Like, it's sort of subtle.
I mean, it's... I really want to know how real that is to Tony, because he was the policeman, wasn't he?
Yeah, we'll find him in a minute. Now, before we get him in, let's answer a question from a Dish listener. If you ever want to contact us, by the way, dish@waitrose.co.uk is the way to do it. This is from Annie, by the way. Hi, Annie. I fear I have lost my caramel mojo. My sister-in-law asked me to make her some for her birthday, and I've tried 7 times, and every single time... My caramel is developing beautifully, but just before it starts to thicken, the butter separates and I end up with like an oily mess. I've tried changing the brands I'm using. I'm relentless watching the caramel so it doesn't catch. And I always manage the temperature so it is gradual. It's sending me totally crazy, Angela. Can you advise on what I am doing wrong? From Annie.
From Annie. Oh, poor Annie. I think you need to just stick with it, Annie. I think you're panicking.
No. That's the wrong answer.
Because you put your sugar in, you add a little bit of water and you watch it start to caramelise and go a lovely golden brown and then you add your butter. And as you add it in, it will start to separate. But you need to, with a whisk, like you would sort of a mayonnaise or your emulsifier and a vinaigrette, just go with it and just whisk and whisk until it smooths out. But I think she's seeing it separate and then sort of, that's it, it's done.
So just keep it whisking.
Just keep it moving until it starts to come together.
And then when it's ready... How do you know when it's like, right, they're now
because
so
there'll be
bonded,
no,
it will
have come to look like a smooth caramel sauce and there'll be no oily sort of layers sitting on top and it would have emulsified. It would look lovely and smooth.
Yeah, well, good luck, Annie. Keep it moving.
Keep it moving, Annie.
Is the advice.
Yeah. Do a disco in the kitchen and maybe, keep it moving.
If you do want to email us with anything, dish@waitrose.co.uk. Right, let's get our guests in. Right, we need a round of applause for our guests because they are here in the room with us, please. They know a thing or two about grilling. They've done serving justice and now they're about to be served lunch. It's Britain's answer to Scorsese and De Niro, Tony Schumacher and Martin Freeman, everybody. Hello. Hello.
Hey, guys.
But it does as a cannon and ball, I think.
It's the alternative in
very much so.
Welcome, guys.
Yeah.
Hello. Thank you.
How are you?
Good.
Really, well.
Really good.
Thank you.
Good now.
You both look well. You both look fit and happy.
Thank you.
Nice.
Thank you. So do you.
Thank you.
A
little bit
of
makeup.
Yeah, we've got full face makeup.
We've had some help as well.
I forgot they had makeup on after leaving here last time and went out, and everyone was like, you look so good. I was like, do I? And then all night, I was like, wow. And people were like, you look great. And then I got home and I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. I washed my face.
I always look like I've escaped from an Undertaker's whenever I go. I've got just have to keep piling it on and piling it on. Yeah, it's so no, it's not a good
one. Hey, you're looking good today. Well, looking good today. Yeah. We're starting with the Negroni.
Yeah. Yeah. So cheers,
guys.
Welcome.
Cheers.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Welcome. Cheers, Ange. Now, Ange, you're a bit of an expert, I feel, in the Negroni department.
Mm. I mean, it's pokey.
It's very strong. Did you make these?
I made it, yeah. Right, okay. I mean, it's just three ingredients.
And did you make it based on, like, what was your blueprint for the Negroni?
Well, I probably did something that is probably a bad thing for a cocktail in that I put, you're probably meant to individual, aren't you?
Yeah.
I just did. Oh, okay.
Stuck it all in
one shaker,
like the catering
for four
call.
People. Yeah. I went like wholesale,
massive
cocktail.
Like a sheep.
So I just did Campari vermouth gin. Equal measures.
It's very nice. It's nice and strong.
Mm. Yes.
Sometimes when I order a Negroni and it's a bit weak, disappointing.
Disappointing.
Sometimes it's watery, and you do want that hit. Mm.
Yeah, you want the
You do.
Yeah.
You've certainly given me the hot. Mm.
Yeah. The first bit's always like, do I like this? And then the second sip's like, oh, yeah, I do actually.
Yeah.
What did,
because we had Stanley Tucci around and he did double the gin or something. Like,
yeah,
he
does
remixes
a different. And I think he does what you without ice as well. I think he's another chill.
He's no ice.
Yeah, no ice. Yeah, I think so. Chill it enough. Yeah. He's a great, I mean, he talked about he has this old cocktail cabinet that either his father did or had. And he basically can do every cocktail, you know, when you come to his house. So he likes a chilled glass, which you did, Nick. I think very good.
Yeah, the Hacktails, you just put it in the freezer. Yeah. That's my recipe.
Yeah. Do you two start a day normally like this?
Yeah, obviously. Always? We always have Negronis in the morning.
It's season two time of The Responder. We love the first series. Excited to see season two.
I bet you say that to all the boys.
No, I don't actually. I really liked it. And do you know when I started watching it? In a morning. Mm. And normally when you're watching a drama, like if we've got to watch a drama for research or work, I never want to watch it. I want to watch it at the time I'd watch it. But I thought, well, we'll watch this little bit this morning. And then I got into a day of responding.
Right.
But the Scouse accent, because I know you as Martin Freeman, totally believable.
Thank you
instantly.
Very much. Thank you.
Instantly. How hard was it to get the Scouse right? Do you practice? Do you have to pretend to be a Scouser at the weekend with your family?
There was a bit of that, I think, before we did series one. Mm-hmm. Series two was a bit more like putting on a jacket that you're more familiar with because your muscle memory's working. But before that, it was, not constantly talking to myself in that accent, but always trying to... I mean, I talk to myself a lot pottering around the house anyway, right? So I'm commentating on everything I do. So I was just doing it in that accent.
Totally normal.
Yeah.
Normal. You normally do it with your moxins, don't you?
Classic toothbrushing. But then I just started doing it more in that accent, speaking more to Scousers. Mm. I had two Zoom sessions with very good voice coaches who were able to help me and give me little keys into placement or whatever. But apart from that, I do go a lot on ear because I have a fit. You couldn't sit me down at a piano, I can play anything, but I've got quite a musical ear as a hearer. So I can pick things up. And for me, it's just practice, And it was fantastic sort of confidence boost for me when Tony first heard me do Scouse, because we'd been having lots of conversations where I'd been saying, listen, if I can't do this properly, I'm not going to try because I can't. If it's 70% good, that's just going to be awful.
Yes.
Mm.
But when Tony first heard me do it, he said, and you might not even realise how good this was for me, but he said, oh, mate, we got nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, thank God for that, And then the more Scousers who heard me, some of whom went, you're not from Liverpool.
No way that you are.
I heard that a couple of times and I was like, thank God. Mm. Yeah. So it's just, it's doing it, it's repetition. It's like being good at anything.
Being good
at chef, football, whatever. Mm. You just have to do it over and over again.
But I suppose filming it up there probably helped as well.
Massively.
And also, you being Scouse, Tony, but it's the nuances that you know.
Totally. Mm.
You know, it's the A-lad and all those sort of, those little things that you think that's someone who feels, you believe in the character as a result of the accent.
We'd be chatting about stuff and you would, he'd say, little weird things. I'd just mention something and pass and he'd go, what was that, mate? cake. Yeah. You know, and just hang on for 2 seconds. And you go, well, you know, yeah. But his accent's better than mine. It's weird. It's so weird. I always think, but the one thing that I said to him was when the show went out, the first episode went out on season one, and it was the one thing, you know, everyone, don't look at social media, don't do this, don't do that. But you can't help it, you just do it, don't you? And the local paper, I was literally like looking at the comments section online, just thinking everyone's going to have a go at me, I'll have to move. Yeah. And everyone was just like, oh my God, can't believe his accent.
Yeah.
It's amazing, you know.
It's a good accent to do.
It's a good accent to do well. Yeah. But if you do it badly.
If you get it wrong, oh no, you'd be.
Yeah, it's one of those accents that I guess people. Because everyone is familiar with it, right? Or they're familiar with what they think it is, familiar with the cartoon version of it. Mm-hmm. I would say, you know, that or Belfast or Glasgow. Yeah. Where, you know, there are certain accents where people go, oh, I could do that. Yeah. And maybe they can, or they end up doing a sort of cartoon version of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And the last thing you want to do if you're somewhere else, wherever it is, but certainly Liverpool is one of those places.
Yes.
The last thing you want to do is go and half-ass it and just kind of go, oh, I reckon it's a bit like this. Like,
No, man.
Because people will let you know. I did a job years ago in America and I pronounced something, you know, I had a sentence and the actress I was working with said, just so you know, that's English people do that. American people don't do that. I was like, thank God.
Why wouldn't you say that?
You've got food in your teeth. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Tell us.
Yeah.
We don't want to look like idiots.
Yeah. You've got banana on your beard.
Yeah. How did you guys first ever meet? When did your paths first cross?
I was sent the script. I was sent Tony's script from our producer, Lawrence Bowen.
Yeah.
And because you'd made contact with Lawrence, hadn't you?
Yeah, yeah. I'd written the script and I'd seen that the production company, Dancing Ledge, had a first look deal with him.
Mm-hmm.
So...
What's a first look deal?
A first look deal... actually, that's not true, actually, because it was before I'd written the script.
Okay.
But I said, a first look deal is when a famous actor...
Martin Freeman.
gets the opportunity to take a look at things first. I mean, it literally is that, you know, is this any good to you? Do you want to do this? You know?
That's nice.
Yeah, it is. And so I'd seen that Dancing Ledge, who I was in contact with at that point, had a deal with him. And I thought, well, I'd just be mad not to write a show that he can be in. It'd just be crazy, you know. So I sent it to them. They said, what should we do with the script? We love it. And I said, well, give it to him.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that was that. And I read it and immediately
liked it. Mm-hmm. I thought, this is a properly good piece of writing by someone who means it, who knows what they're talking about, but also, and I've said this to you, and it's not meant to be a backhanded compliment, if I'm backhanding you, you'll know about it. I'm not going to hide it. But no, but like the compliment was... That it felt like someone who didn't know all the rules, whether to obey them or break them or not.
Right.
Not backhanded. It's true.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I've
done young people's, like I've done plays by literally school kids who are maybe from 9 to 12.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the great things about that is they have no idea what you're supposed to write, so they just write anything.
Yeah.
Now, this was obviously not quite that, but it was a step up from in the Night Garden. But at the same time, what was it?
By the way, I love it. The Night Garden. I've got a 2 year old. I love it.
Yeah, that got me through being a dad. But no, it was someone who was bold and who hadn't been told yet, oh no, you can't do that because you've got it. It was
free.
It was really free.
Yeah.
It was really free and I loved that. And I instantly had, it was very visually written, so I instantly knew how I wanted to look. I instantly knew, I could see me in it. Do you know what I mean? I could see me doing it or more importantly, I could see Chris doing it. Actually, the person I was seeing playing it probably wasn't me. It was a sort of a composite of various... you know, shadows and colours and shapes or whatever. But I was like, I've got to try and somehow fit into that. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing about, if I couldn't do it properly Scouse, I would just do it in my own accent because as you've said, you know, people are...
I mean, I was a copper and I worked with countless coppers who were from Liverpool when I was working in Liverpool, you know. So
it wasn't a deal breaker, but I knew I wanted to get it properly.
And weirdly, I didn't doubt that you could do it in Scouse.
What was it about Martin that you saw where you were like, it's got to be... Martin Freeman. Do you watch Fargo?
Yeah, exactly. That was it. I was just going to say, I saw him in Fargo Yeah, and obviously I'd seen him do stuff, you know.
That sounded quite...
Yeah.
Obviously.
That sounded quite disparaging.
I'll be honest with you.
I'd seen him do stuff. I hadn't liked it.
It was meant to.
But that's his...
No, I'd seen him in Fargo, and I think Fargo, you know, every series of Fargo is amongst the best TV being made at the moment. I'd seen him in that. I remember looking at it and just thinking, oh my God, you know, he's good, you know, he's so good. And there was a moment in Fargo where you send your girlfriend into a shop to be killed by Lorne Malvo, Billy Bob. Mm-hmm. And there's a moment where, you don't send her in to be killed. You send her in not knowing if she'll be killed. And that's what made it special for me, was that she was going in there and you were testing the water. Is she going to die? Is she not going to die?
Yeah.
And it was that beat where your face was kind of, is it? Is she gone? Is it? What is it? And it was all there, silence.
You were like, ooh, and it acting.
Was as, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Look at this acting.
Good acting.
There's acting.
That
I look at the dog. I said, do you see that?
See that?
That's acting. The dog went, he's all right, but I mean, he's not. But it was that moment. And for me, it was that. I just thought, yeah, you know, he'll be great in this. But the madness of even thinking that, it's like, he'd be great in this. Like, it's going to get made.
Did you not think it was
going to
get made?
I thought it was going to be working back at a council for 6 months. So.
Did you really?
Really, honestly. Wow. I mean, that's just crazy, isn't it? How's it going to get made?
Because you worked as a policeman yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
And were you writing when you were working there? Like,
No, I'd stopped writing completely and I ended up having a nervous breakdown while I was a bobby and I resigned from the job and it was a car crash and I ended up sleeping in my car and it was a nightmare, you know. And then... when I had nothing to lose, I thought, well, I can do this thing that I'd always wanted to do as a kid, which was be a writer. So I started writing, and I wrote books, and I wrote various things and stuff, and columns for magazines and stuff. And then it was my wife said, why don't you write something for TV? And that was it. Here we are.
That's amazing.
Yeah, look at this.
Pleasure.
Bang.
Oh,
mate.
This looks really fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's seasoned enough, but if you do want more cheese, there's some more parmesan there. And there's a few little garlic bread toast.
The garlic bread toast.
Get him there.
I saw the garlic bread toast landing and got a bit excited, to be honest with you, because I'm just like, that just looks...
Love a little garlic bread moment. You know. So why are we eating, Ange?
We've got a fantastic, classic bolognese. A bolognese made with pappardelle, and I've adapted it slightly.
How have you adapted it, Ange?
I haven't put tin tomatoes in, and I've put dried porcini mushrooms instead of just normal chestnut mushrooms.
So is there traditionally mushrooms always in a bolognese?
Not the way I've always done it, but because I was following this recipe, I thought I'd put dried in rather than just normal chestnut mushrooms. Jesus. And traditionally it's more tomato puree rather than tin tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I've slightly, so you can tell me whether you like it or not.
I do occasionally put a little bit of Guinness in.
Oh, yeah.
Where'd you get that one from, Tony?
It's normally when I'm spilling it when I'm drinking.
You just drink it and it just
slows up your mouth. Yeah, but no, I do occasionally. I put a little splash of Guinness in. I know some people put red wine in, but it's just...
Oh, yeah, I put a little bit of red wine.
Yeah. I do a little red wine.
Probably my favourite film unoriginally is The Godfather, and so there's a great scene in where you know there's a bit of bolognese where there's a pasta sauce being made, and the wine and the bit of sugar.
But it's also the other one that's great along those lines is Goodfellas when they're in the prison,
and they're slicing it with the razor blade. Isn't that amazing? Like, I was talking to one of my kids about that the other day, about just the power of image, or just the filmed image, because everyone remembers the razor blade going through the garlic, you know, chopping it really, really fine. It's incredible. It's not like the most dramatic scene in that film by anything, but it's like as a purely
given that film.
Yeah, exactly. But an aesthetic image, you remember that completely.
Really stayed with us.
Isn't it that anecdote? I don't know how true it is, but in The Godfather, apparently, before The Godfather, the Mafia didn't really act like that.
After
The Godfather, it was suddenly, you know...
Art imitates life.
They were like, actually, this is really fast. Yes. We should do that. So, Ange, run us through this recipe real quick. What are the key bits to making this
so
the best
I've got
it can be?
Diced beef and pork, a little bit of pancetta in there as well, and then a thing called sofrito, which is onion, celery, bit of garlic, bit of carrot, all really finely diced and cooked down. And then the secret for me is long time cooking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
how long are you talking?
It's about 3 hours.
3 hours?
Yeah, yeah, just three literally hours. On a little, you know. 3 hours. You're very lucky it wasn't burnt because it was a total preparation. So I'm listening, I'm watching the responder. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, oh, my God, what's going on? Yeah. Poor man, why is he walking around with that bag of drugs the whole time? Why doesn't he just put it somewhere?
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, why is it not in a loft and hidden?
You basically sound like me there.
I was like, what's going on? And then I had the timer on for the bolognese, but I was so into the responder, I sort of missed it. And then I suddenly thought, that's smelling quite strong, ran downstairs. And it was just on that point.
That's the sign of a great TV show.
Yeah. Oh. No, that's
ruin,
it.
Ruin your Michelin star.
Yeah. Food ruining credentials.
Exactly.
Ruin your legacy.
Which is why we shouldn't have TVs and kitchens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And a pappardelle is the one, the traditional one with a bolognese.
But a thick pasta, not spaghetti.
So it wouldn't be spaghetti?
No. A very American thing.
Okay.
Yeah, you see, that's a real sort of Southern American thing. And they would put, well, New York, I'd say, and more chili in there, a lot more tomato. Mm. They always do a lot. Like you say, it's no joke, The Godfather. Mm. That, in a way, was real. Mm. You know, it's always much more tomato-based, you know.
Oh, what was that about?
All from the South.
Right, okay.
A lot of the mafiosa from the Southern Italians, so their thing was all tomato, so they would do like that. Yeah. And then we've got a fantastic Villa Antonori wine. I mean, we're getting you like three glasses full there. We've got water, Negronis, and wine.
If you want to make the bolognese that Angela's made for us all today, it's called the Best Bolognese. It's a recipe by Martha Collison. All the ingredients are available in a Waitrose or on waitrose.com. And also you find the recipe and all the recipes we do at waitrose.com/dish recipes. Now, before we sat down, Martin, you were telling me you've not had a bolognese. You've had a bit of a bolognese hiatus.
Why?
Because
I've come off being a vegetarian. I started being a vegetarian in like January 1986.
Wow.
So
for ethical reasons or health or
yeah, because I just wasn't. I was never really. I was never comfortable with the idea of eating animals.
Okay.
So I've not had a really good bolognese since then. My mum was a pretty good cook.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not as skilled as you.
Yeah. she was brilliant.
No. Mm-hmm. But so this is the first proper bolognese maybe I've ever had. Do you know what I mean?
Like 38 years.
For 38 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was always having, you know, so I always had veggie
good.
Stuff. And yeah. it's really lovely. But I was always had veggie sort of replacements and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, in the last several months, it's really new, going back to being an omnivore.
Yeah.
Just sort of eating what I like. It's a funny one because I like meat replacement things.
Mm.
But my reservation about them is that they can be very, very processed.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to eat less processed food, you know.
But maybe you sort of do, I suppose you probably maybe do what I do, is that rather than eat meat every day, maybe once or twice every 2 weeks, but just buy the best you can afford that's ethical, properly looked after, reared, rather than just buying processed and, factory. Yeah, exactly,
We were together when the request came through to do show, you know. Okay. And I have never seen a man get so excited about spaghetti bolognese. As I saw, he was literally, honestly, he was like a dog. To go, can we have spaghetti bolognese? I was like, oh, maybe you should have some box, you know. Oh, I want spaghetti bolognese!
Because I thought, so you're capable of doing fancy things.
Mm.
And I thought, well, this isn't fancy. It's good, solid, honest.
Yeah.
A sort of staple,
it can't be,
but well done.
Yeah.
And I think I've not had that good, honest staple for decades.
Yeah,
we've got a tub for you to take out with you, Martin.
We've got loads left over there for you.
I can say that my mum was definitely not as good a cook as me. Definitely not good. I felt like she was, you know, she did certain. We used to have a thing. I don't know. I'm not too sure. My wife reckons. I always assumed everyone had the same thing, but my wife's telling me this isn't true. That you go, it's Tuesday, it's pork chops.
Mm-hmm.
It's Wednesday, it's mince. That was always the thing. But she had three kids and, you know, a lot to do with a life.
I think a lot of people did do that.
Yeah.
Especially when they had a lot of kids and they had to plan.
I totally get it. You know, I totally understand it. But my aunt lived in the States. She married an American airman and went out to Georgia. And she came home to visit one day and made spaghetti bolognese for us. Like, in that, it's, you know, American style of, you know, with tins of tomato going in and stuff. And I remember being a kid going into school the next day, going, I'll do spaghetti bolognese for me.
And everyone was like, oh my God, what was it like? Yeah. Like, we were all just so normal with like grey food, you know. Ah, yeah, it was all red, you know. No idea. It was all red, you know.
Oh, that is God. Amazing. I love those.
I lived with a vegan for a while. Mm. And when I lived at her house, I'd eat, you know, vegan food. Huh. And then the thing that I had to break my veganism for was at a party. I saw a Scotch egg.
Oh,
I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
But at the time, I really remember thinking, well, I'll just have an egg and be veggie. Mm. And then I ate about four of them and I was like, oh, they're wrapped in sausage meat. That's why they're nice.
That's, you know, how to get you.
Scotch egg was one of the things.
Oh,
I thought,
really? Yeah.
I'm allowed, you know, because again, it's a free country. I can do what I like.
Yeah, you can have a Scotch egg, Martin.
And also, do you know the other thing? A pork pie with the jelly and all that shit. Yeah. But, you know, am I allowed to say all that shit?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm very drunk.
Yeah.
This would be a very different interview if I wasn't under such heavy sedation. A bit of mustard on a pork pie.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Well, I literally got off the train last night, was walking up to the hotel and bought myself two pork pies.
Oh,
sat
fabulous.
On the bed like Alan Partridge at like 11 o'clock at night eating cold pork pie. Literally rubbing my stomach. Going,
it's food of the gods.
Yeah, it's good.
It's good.
Yeah. Let me ask you, how much of a busman's holiday is it for you to kind of, you know, as someone who can really, really cook?
Thank you.
Well, I mean, that's undeniable.
Yeah.
As someone who can, this is your, pardon the pun, bread and butter.
Yeah.
How much do you like eating food that is really simple, unpretentious, or even maybe crap? Do you eat crap food?
Oh, yeah. Hmm. I've been known to do that. Quite a lot. Yeah.
You have to come into pot noodles at home.
Not so much pot noodles. I love a crisp. Oh. Not that I don't think crisp is crap necessarily, but it is processed, you know.
Yeah. Very much.
But I remember one time I'd done this program about health, kids and healthy eating and all the rest of it, and my friend happened to ring me up and she said, I saw that program last night. I said, oh, yeah. She's gone then. What are you eating now? I said, you really want the truth? I said, I'm very hungover. I have two slices of white bread, butter, and a packet of flaked crisps. Yeah. She said, I knew you were full of shit. Because of you, Mike, I'm saying Ricky Gervais came to the restaurants and he's now full on vegan.
Mm.
You know, and Ricky just looked at me and goes, you know all this, you know, can this be like all vegan? I said, yes. You know, I'm not going to change lamb into a vegetable, but I can do you a full-on vegan menu, you know. Mm. And I think that's, to me, is a better skill in some respects because you've got to make great vegetables taste delicious.
Mm.
Whereas I think a lot of chefs, it's easy to make meat taste delicious because, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's delicious.
Exactly.
There's sometimes a bit of a snobbery about veggie stuff.
Yeah,
And there's sometimes a bit of... unnecessary hostility
exactly,
towards
yes.
being vegetarian.
Yeah, yeah. I know.
There really is, actually, isn't there?
We're over that now.
Yeah, she's spearheaded that anger, actually. Yeah. She started it.
No, I know, because there's no need for it. You
no,
know, like, if
God.
Someone's made a different choice to you, then fine, whatever.
Yeah,
you know.
Not at all. But, I agree.
Because also, vegetarian food is and can be genuinely fantastic.
Yeah,
you know, not just like a charity case, but properly lovely.
Oh, yeah.
I know that I just wanted more balance in my diet. That's kind of why I did it. It wasn't even a craving. You speak to so many people, because I've been vegetarian most of my life.
Yeah.
Well, and then I was pescatarian, actually. Yeah. So I went from pesky to what I am now. But for a long time, I was veggie for years and years and years. And people would say, yeah, but don't you just miss a bacon sandwich? And I never did. I genuinely never did until one day I was rehearsing a play in Birmingham.
Yeah.
I was veggie. I was in my late 20s and I found my feet taking me to a chippy. It was weird, man. You know, and before I knew it, I was ordering a piece of cod.
Yeah.
I was like, what am I doing? And I was taking it and going, this is wrong. But then having it because I always knew I liked the taste of meat and fish.
Yeah.
It wasn't about that.
Yeah.
But it was just about where your line is.
Yeah.
You know, like, and so my line shifted, you know.
I can literally be missing a bacon sandwich while I'm eating a bacon sandwich. It's in the moment. When I've swallowed, I miss a bit of bacon sandwich.
I'm missing
it. Oh, God. Nothing slaps like a bacon sandwich. A friend of mine, he was veggie all his life until he was in his 40s and he got a new girlfriend.
Mm. Yeah.
And at the time, they just spent like 2 days together. And he said, you know, she was making a bacon sandwich in her underwear one morning. And she went, do you want a bacon sandwich? And he went, yeah. And then he just ate meat forever onwards.
The underwear has something to
do with it.
And he said he'd lasted like 40, 45 years.
Yeah.
And then was like, yep. And just then ate. That was it. That was it. The pork temptress. The pork temptress. Tony, we've been stalking your social media. Yeah. We've noticed that pastime of yours is you quite like videos of cats and dogs.
Yeah. Oh God, yeah.
They've made you cry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you quite a man in touch with your emotions? Are you quite an emotional man?
Oh my God,
You cry at a cat video.
I literally will cry at a cat video. I'll cry. Duncan, my son, has got a book about Spot loses his mummy.
Oh, poor Spot.
Don't start because I'll go. And there's like this 4 pages, right? I can't get past page 2 when I'm starting to cry.
Wow.
Honestly, it just kills me every time. The kids looking at me like, what's wrong with you? You know, and I sob my heart out constantly. Mm. Wow. Honestly, just sob my heart out constantly.
And have you always been like that?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't great in the police, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, in the police.
Yeah. I quite like it in a way.
Where your heart is
asleep. That's okay, you know, when you're sitting in restaurants and I start crying. But I love it. Yeah. I think it's cool. Why not?
I think it's good. I'm a crier too. For me, it's music. So if you're watching something in a film that's not really that sad or it's just started, I'm like, please, mum's going. Yeah. Like, you don't even know who they are yet.
Yeah.
But it gets me.
Toddler books for me is terrible, but it's not great. Toddler books is terrible, but it's not great when you've got someone in a headlock and you're trying to put in the back of the van and you start sobbing, you know. That's not great. Yeah. I cry when I'm writing of a night.
Do you?
Yeah, he cries when he needs it. But
Martin, we come into your therapy session.
I sit like 2 in the morning, shut my eyes off.
Always
get
a good cry.
What about you, Martin? Are you similar? Are you easily moved by words?
You're very cold, man. Yeah.
You're very cold.
I'm emotional. No, I'm definitely emotional.
Yeah,
I suppose I think as a person to be... I'm a bit of a crier.
Yeah.
So, I mean, occasionally I can be talking to Rachel about something and I'll be like, I'm now crying. This is about something not about our life, but just about how grateful I am that I'm not living there or I'm not living at that time in history or whatever, you know. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's a positive thing, of course. But also I think, you know, sometimes you just got, you know, fix
what
the
about in, when you were acting, and you got a cry on demand?
I'm not great at that. But what I know, the older I've got, is sometimes that there were periods where I thought, this is... If you don't try and force it and you let it come, then that's it's more honest, and B, you're not forcing your crying on the audience. Look, I'm really acting, I'm crying, and you can actually just let it sort of happen if it's supposed to happen. I think the hard thing is if you set yourself up. If he writes a scene and he doesn't, but if a writer writes a scene where you go that he just cries, you know, like, well, that's a hard. You know, that's because then it's like, then you're playing the end of the, that's the whole game, is I've just got to cry.
I've got to cry.
However good it is, however relevant it is, you've just got to cry. And what if you just technically can't? You know, like, you can, you know, someone come up and, you know, blow what we call a tear stick and, you know, blow air into your eye so it gets all red. And that's totally fine. But I just think, also, there's nothing more moving for an audience than to watch a person, sorry to say, but especially a man, but a person, try not to cry. Mm-hmm. That's the most moving thing. You know, trying to see someone struggling with trying not to cry is more moving than, you know, there's, you know, floodgates. You know, just...
So we like a accidental...
Accidental crying.
Or a holding's
Absolutely, no. Like, if the crying is a byproduct of what the scene is about, rather than the end of the scene itself.
Sure.
Sinead O'Connor's cry was a byproduct. An unplanned tear.
Yes.
Okay, we'll call it the Sinead method.
The Sinead method.
Fair play. Hey, we come to the end of the show question. For your chance to win a Waitrose goodie bag. So we have done one each.
One each.
So we've done the big shot for you, basically.
This is high stakes.
Here's a question written by our production team. If you two were to star together as a detective duo, who would be the good cop? Who would be the bad cop?
Completely off the top of my head, I think I'd be the bad cop.
Do you know what? You don't surprise me, you said. Literally everyone's gone, huh?
No, but you actually have been a cop.
Yeah.
So Tony has actually done things that I don't want to do in real life, and I'm very happy acting them.
Mm.
And I always slightly struggle to picture Tony as a functioning police officer who has to do really hard, difficult, potentially physically demanding things because he's so he's so sort of lovely.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you can't be the other thing, but in our show...
All the lovely coppers have all just leaned forward.
No, in our show, I'm being
I know exactly what you mean.
Because I think you could be... I mean, and I can pretend to be affable.
Yeah, you're doing it now. Like any psychopath, I can pretend. We've had a whole hour of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Brilliant.
I can pretend. But I think he'd be good.
You'd be good cop. Are you agreeing with that? I think, but then I do think those roles are the same, because
you do fancy having a little change every now and then. So I think I'll probably say I'll give out the headlocks.
Yeah, of course.
And you bring in the buns. But yeah, no, I think he's right. I think I would be the good cop.
So say you are the detective duo. We've got the good cop. We've got the bad cop. Real quick, Tony, what's the origin story for this brand new cop drama? Martin and Sony.
It's chalk and cheese.
Yeah.
Cockney and Scouse. It is.
There is a film called that.
I'll play the.
There is a film called that.
And I'll play the Cockney. You can play the Scouse, and it will be set in the 70s.
Ooh. Yes.
And nice. I'll wear a brown leather jacket.
I'm sold.
I like that.
Proper cop uniform.
I love that level of detail.
Yeah. I like that people were like, oh, yeah.
It's only because we've got a brown leather jacket.
We were sold.
You watch quite a lot of television and you go, that is the level of detail they've done.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Brown leather jacket. Is that it? Is that all you're bringing?
You got to find out in season two of Responder. That's as good as it gets.
Yeah, he's still got a skinhead and a beard.
guys, thank you so much. That
brilliant.
Was a lot of fun.
Thank you for coming around to see us.
Make sure you check out Responder on BBC iPlayer.
It's brilliant.
It really is brilliant. So make sure you go watch it.
Yeah.
Round of applause, Martin and Tony.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you. Oh, mate. Thank you.
I didn't realise this was part of it.
Coming up next week on Dish, we are going to be joined by none other than Dua Lipa. You're into astrology.
I am, yeah.
How much does it dictate your life? Will you make a decision based on it?
Let's put it this way.
Okay.
I don't have a therapist, but I have an astrologist.
That's the correct pop star answer.
Details of all the delicious meals I've cooked on Dish can be found at waitrose.com/dishrecipes. All the links are in our show notes.
Angela is your fairy godmother of food. Email her a question about food. She loves it. dish@waitrose.co.uk.
Dish is an SE Creative Studio production.
Waitrose. Food to feel good about.